Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical, underage sale prohibited. Introducing Zone Nicotine Pouches, the perfect balance of unparalleled comfort, longer-lasting flavor, and nicotine that satisfies. Whether you're zoning in during the race or zoning out after a tough day at work, Zone gets you there faster and keeps you there longer. Available in 7 flavors and in 6 and 9 milligram strengths. Find Zone at ZonePouches.com and retailers near you. Own your Zone with Zone Nicotine Pouches. Napa!
Silence is golden, especially when it comes to brakes. That's why Napa Silent Guard are built to be one of the smoothest and most quiet brakes on the market. Made with fiber-reinforced shims that eliminate noise for the life of the pad, rubber-coated hardware for a better fit, and quality design that meets and exceeds OE performance. Silent Guard brakes deliver the stopping power drivers demand. Available now at Napa locations nationwide. Napa!
The following is a production of the Motor Racing Network, the voice of NASCAR.
The Motor Racing Network presents NASCAR Live.
He's a car length and a half to the good over Kyle Larson. Here comes Larson again. A final try. He's looking to the high side. Here he comes. Larson squeezes up against the fence.
Chris Buescher gives him room. We're going to drag race to the start-finish line. Here comes Truex. They bang sideways at the line. Photo finish in the Advent Health 400 as they crash behind them. Chris Buescher by 1/1000th of a second beats Kyle Larson to the line. They just changed it on timing and scoring and put Kyle Larson as the winner. So Larson by 1/1000th of a second will edge out Chris Buescher.
I just hung a left and endured him and just tried to stall his momentum, and he had it slowly coming back to me at the line. So just thankful that it was enough, and those guys behind us didn't get a huge run and get to our outside. So just incredible. I need to see the replay. I don't really know, you know, what it all looked like, but it was damn cool from my seat.
NASCAR Live is brought to you by Toyota. For the latest Toyota racing information, visit toyotaracing.com. From the MRN studios in Concord, North Carolina, here is your host, Mike Bagley.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of NASCAR Live here on the Motor Racing Network. Mike Bagley and the entire MRN crew here with you after we experienced the closest finish in NASCAR Cup Series history Sunday at Kansas Speedway. That finish produced the second win of 2024 for Kyle Larson. Now, we are off to Darlington for Throwback Weekend, and we've got a jam-packed show for you tonight. We will relive that wild ending at Kansas Speedway with a brand new NASCAR Live Backtracks. Also, Ross Chastain will stop by. In honor of Throwback Weekend, we'll do a deep dive into all the paint schemes you'll see on track at Darlington. Crew Chief Rodney Childers will stop by to discuss his team honoring his short track roots. And our very own MRN crew will reminisce on their first race with the network and a whole lot more. But first, Kyle Ricci is here with the latest check of NASCAR headlines. Kyle, what do you have for us?
Mike, Dale Earnhardt Jr. will be returning to the TV booth in 2025. TNT Sports has announced that the NASCAR Hall of Famer will be joining their broadcast team when NASCAR returns to the network next season. Earnhardt Jr. will serve as an on-air commentator and will also contribute to a new Bleacher Report content series distributed across RB's social and digital platforms. This wasn't the only news to come from Dale Jr. this past weekend. Junior Motorsports has announced that they will bring back Carson Quapple for 6 additional races this season, beginning Saturday at Darlington Raceway. Quapple will also pilot the number 88 Chevrolet in Xfinity Series events at New Hampshire, Indianapolis, Michigan, Darlington in the fall, and at Talladega. This weekend at Darlington Raceway, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. and the number 47 Kroger Racing Camaro of JTG Racing pay homage to a NASCAR Hall of Famer during Throwback Weekend. Their scheme will honor Mark Martin's 2004 Budweiser Shootout paint scheme, which competed at Daytona International Speedway. And just a reminder that you can catch the NASCAR Cup Series and the Goodyear 400 this Sunday at 2 o'clock Eastern Time, exclusively on the Motor Racing Network. Mike.
Thank you, Kyle. Coming up, we will relive the closest finish.
Whelan Engineering, a global leader in the emergency warning industry, designs and manufactures reliable and powerful warning lights, white illumination lighting,
Sirens, controllers and warning systems for the automotive, aviation and mass notification industries worldwide. Wieland products are designed, sourced and manufactured in America and tested on site to meet the toughest industry standards. Wieland Engineering, manufactured in America for over 70 years. We never left and we're here to stay.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. Over the weekend in the Heartland, NASCAR made a visit to the Kansas Speedway. That mile-and-a-half oval has become one of NASCAR's staple tracks. Sunday, the AdventHealth 400 proved that statement to be true once again. Let's relive all the action from the AdventHealth 400.
3 hours, 12 minutes delayed by Mother Nature, but delayed no more. It's the AdventHealth 400 Kansas Speedway, the NASCAR Cup Series, and we are underway.
Virtually a dead even race as they race to corner number one.
The front three are basically leaning on each other, coming out the end of the front stretch. Hamlin to the inside of Larson, Chastain behind them, waiting to see which lane will open up.
Still side by side for the race lead at Kansas, Hamlin and Larson. These two wheel to wheel coming back into turn three, and all the while Ross Chastain sitting right behind.
Absolutely insane racing here this afternoon, just swapping the lead back and forth. This time the advantage goes to Denny Hamlin. Now Chastain is on the attack. He'll go to the outside on Kyle Larson.
Jeff, I got to tell you, and all the race fans listening, if you have not figured out what your plans are for the fall yet, go ahead and make plans to come to Kansas Speedway. It's going to be a playoff race. If it's anything like what we're seeing right now, it's going to be unbelievable. This is by far the best race of the season. We're only 71 laps into it. Green and white checkered flag from Greg Harris on the flag stand. Denny Hamlin wins stage number one.
Back at it at the Kansas Speedway. Stage one, insane. What do we have in store now? Back at it we go. C-Bell on the outside. Ross Chastain on the inside. Exactly how he started at the drop of the green.
Everybody double wide formation to start. Now here comes a three-wide lane for about six between Kyle Busch and others as they're wheel-to-wheel for the lead.
Martin Truex Jr. back around the seventh position and stacked him three-wide. Now goes double-wide at the front of the field. Ross Chastain, the race leader.
And he's going to be crowded at the bottom of the track by Christopher Bell. Here comes a hard-charging Kyle Larson to the bottom. They're going to go four-wide. Now five-wide at the start-finish line. What a move by Chris Buescher.
Green and white checkered flag flying at the start-finish line, and he is picking up his first stage win of the season. Chris Buescher across the line. Stage two winner over Kyle Larson, Denny Hamlin.
Back at Kansas Speedway, pit road penalty. Crew member over the wall too soon on then leader, current second place driver Chris Buescher. He's going to fall to the tail end of the field for this restart.
They're come on a penalty on us here for over the wall too soon. We're looking at the video just to see if we can argue something here.
That cannot happen!
Travel turn number 1-3. Four cars involved at the feet of Mike Bagley.
It's Corey LaJoie, Austin Hill, and Jimmy Johnson. Everybody will leave this crash scene in turns 1 and 2, except for the Jimmy Johnson car. It sits nose towards the inside wall. Smoke just pouring from underneath the hood of that car, and the right front torn to pieces, the back end torn to pieces as well.
7 cents up. Wow, that wasn't cool.
Battle for the lead continues off the end of the back straightaway. Kyle Larson to the outside and Kyle Busch to the inside. They go wheel to wheel.
It's on again here at the Kansas Speedway. Kyle versus Kyle. Busch on the inside. Larson on the outside.
Oh, trouble off turn number four. It is Joey Logano. His car gets turned coming up off of turn number four in the midst of a pack of traffic.
And that'll bring us under the caution flag again. Joey Logano with a spin off turn number four.
It's turned the leaderboard upside down. Here's why. Gilliland race leader, well documented by Alex Hayden. Hamlin back in a position to walk away with a victory. He'll line up second. Chris Buescher, after having the incident on pit road, they're up to third.
Driving with conviction, Chris Buescher on the bottom of the racetrack. Side by side for the race lead with Denny Hamlin. To the bottom he'll go. Buescher takes over the lead.
Private battle for the point between Buescher and Hamlin. They've got about 15 car lengths over a side-by-side battle with Bubba Wallace and Kyle Busch. Here's Chris Buescher inside of Hamlin across his nose. Sole possession of the lead for Buescher. Hamlin has gone by Zane Smith, Joey Logano, and Bubba Wallace. Truex now will close in on the Bubba Wallace car. Matter of fact, he'll pass them all. Truex is on the move. Kyle Busch around in two. He'll spin to the bottom of the racetrack. Trouble for Kyle Busch as he'll spin the Cheddar Chevy to the bottom of the beginning of the back straightaway.
Caution on the speedway for the seventh time in the Advent Health 400.
Crowd here at the Kansas Speedway on their feet as we get ready to settle it tonight. Again, a green, white, checkered flag. If we stay under the green flag, Denny Hamlin, Chris Buescher, ready to go.
In overtime, here we come to the Geico restart zone. Hamlin, the control car. Green flag back in the air. Hamlin waits till late in the zone. They'll match each other stride for stride on the restart. Here comes Kyle Larson, three wide for the lead.
Larson almost puts it off in the grass, and Hamlin's going to get the shuffle. Buescher away with the lead. Here comes Kyle Larson down low, and Chase Elliott around the outside trying to get a spot off the corner.
Chris Buescher with the lead. Kyle Larson dances back and forth, just a couple of feet off the back bumper. Larson goes low. Buescher throws the block. Here's Larson to the high side.
But the driver that is rolling is Martin Truex Jr. He stacks them three wide. He's got third. He's looking for more. Chris Buescher's going to lead the field back to one for the final time.
He's got Kyle Larson right behind him. They're three wide for position number three. Truex, Hamlin, and Elliott there as Chris Buescher will lead for the final time off turn two.
He's a car length and a half to the good over Kyle Larson. Here comes Larson again. A final try. He's looking to the high side. Here he comes. Larson squeezes up against the fence.
Chris Buescher gives him room. We're going to drag race to the start-finish line. Here comes Truex. They bang sideways at the line. Photo finish in the Advent Health 400 as they crash behind them. Chris Buescher by 1/1000th of a second beats Kyle Larson to the line.
Yes! Oh, yeah! Good work! Heck yeah, that is awesome! Good work, girl. I know I missed that one.
Whew. And this team is losing their minds. They get the first win for 2024 for Ford. Chris Buescher coming across the line to his team, just cheering. Scott Graves is the guy on top of the box.
Now they're saying five.
Okay, they're saying maybe Larson, maybe one. So they're tempering their excitement down here. We'll wait to hear what the call was.
For the camera, five is our winner. For the camera, five is our winner. And the story pilot is wrong. It was the five for the camera.
They just changed it on timing and scoring and put Kyle Larson as the winner. So Larson by 1/1000th of a second will edge out Chris Buescher.
Run out or say it, five.
There's no way. We won. They just said the five was one.
That was awesome. My timing and scoring show is 0.000. Seriously, 0.0000.
Jeff, we talked about this being probably the best race of the year. I think we can solidify the best race of the year and maybe more.
Because it was now officially the closest race in NASCAR history.
We may have been 3 hours late getting going on Sunday, but it was well worth the wait. Coming up, Ross Chastain will stop by.
Kyle Larson brings his Chevy and four tires to Sunoco Racing Fuel.
From fueling NASCAR champions on the track for over 20 years to innovating 94 octane, the highest octane on the market, performance is what Sunoco does. All Sunoco fuel at the pump meets the same top-tier standards as the fuel used in NASCAR.
Ryan's not here for Ryan Blaney. Four tires with Sunoco fuel.
From the track to your tank, you can trust Sunoco to help your vehicle perform at its peak.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. Ross Chastain has had a lot of ups and downs at Darlington Raceway. He typically finds his way to the front, but 1 year ago endured tough luck as he tangled with Kyle Larson. So how is the season going, and can he turn his luck around at the Lady in Black? Ross joins us now to discuss exactly that.
Here they come toward turn number one. Ross Chastain all by himself. Brad Keselowski struggling in front of him, or that's the J.J. Yaley machine. And off turn two, it's a YRB kind of afternoon.
It is
Ross Chastain, your race leader, back to the corner. Ryan Blaney, your number one championship contender, following him through.
Ross Chastain will win the season finale at the Phoenix Raceway.
Let's talk about 2024 so far. We're almost halfway through to the Olympic break. How would you assess the one team, not Trackhouse, but what you and your team are doing right now?
Well, it's pretty wild. You said Olympic break, thinking that just last week I was road cycling with Dan Jansen, Olympic gold medalist, and he was showing me his gold medal, and I'd never actually seen it in person. So that's pretty wild. Small side note there, but I think we've got opportunities to win. I think that our best one so far had been Las Vegas, and I sped on pit road and took us out, but we were capable of running with the 5 and 45. We still finished third on two tires, but we were capable before that of running with them and beating them on four. So other than that, though, we've had our fair share of 12th place days, and we've had our fair share of 7th place days, and I feel like we're right in that window. So a little bit more, a little balance, a little less disparity front to rear, side to side of tires sliding, and we'll get to the top five. And then I feel like once you're in the top five, then you've got shots every week.
When you have one getaway, based on what you describe, when you get back to the race shop, because the box score has a number, it doesn't get the context. You give context, the team knows the context. How long does it take to get to that and file that away to be like, hey, when we were here earlier, we had this race covered, had a challenge on pit road. What's the context, I guess, saving like to basically get in the mindset of, you know, may have shown like 25th, but we actually were a top five car.
Yeah, I mean, I take the bad and I let it hurt. I let it marinate Sunday night and really feel it. It hurts to travel home and go to bed and right, try to watch the race back Monday morning, Sunday night, whenever I feel like doing it, whenever I'm mentally ready to do it. And good and bad finishes are often not the same time that I look back at the race. So, I have to put it away at some point, but I take away that at that mile and a half, the good things we had in our car, because they're not going to be that different coming here to these tracks coming up in the mile and a half especially.
Where's Trackhouse as a whole? We're talking about the one team, but obviously Daniels won this year in Atlanta earlier. How would you assess the performance of Trackhouse Racing overall this year?
I mean, look, we're competing with the greats of this sport, and the fact that we're competing for the third year now is no surprise, but it's hard. It's challenging, and we're leaning into all of our tools at GM, Chevrolet, and the tech center they built there in Concord, and Daniel and I live over there, basically. I mean, we spend a lot of hours there. Our teams rely on a lot. We're in a good spot.
How would you assess the evolution of the race car? Because it seems like that when we started this exercise, everybody was packed together. We had all these different winners. But with every year, it seems like the garage is opening back up to, you know, those that understand it or getting it are starting to tiptoe away a little bit. Are you in that understanding area at Trackhouse right now to where you guys are getting there to the point to where, not saying you've maximized the car, but you're getting a better understanding of what that needs, what you need to give it, what that car needs to give you?
Well, money buys speed. And you're going to see that in any form of racing, from the grassroots, hobby stock, street stock level, whatever your most entry-level class is at your local 3/8 quarter mile track, up to cup, money buys speed. And the good part is we've got a couple of owners that like spending money, and we're finding ways for them to do it, and they're encouraging us to find more ways. What do we need to invest in? So we don't have the manpower, we don't have the quantity of people, but we've got quality, and don't sleep on us, that's for sure.
Before we talk about Darlington, I want to back up to where we started this interview, and how in the world do you go biking with Dan Jansen?
He's a strength coach at GM, so he's over all the Chevrolet drivers that opt into the WISE program. A little hidden secret there that we've got that's, I guess, not so hidden anymore since I talked about it, but it's so cool. I mean, he's just such a great guy, and I just lean into him and try to soak up as much as I can from him, and just look, you know, learning and hearing his stories are so cool. And then obviously, I'm not training like he trained at my age, like when he was younger. It's pretty crazy what they went through and what he did and what he dedicated in his life to go chase that and chase that competition that only came around every couple of years. And so for us, he's training us and we're doing, you know, that not Olympic caliber, but very high caliber competitions every Sunday afternoon.
He's obviously done things in a totally different discipline of sports than what you do. Can he give you tips? Can he help you? Like, what's the common conversation among athletes, regardless of whatever sport they're involved in?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I can't tell you all of our secrets, but...
Sure you can. Come on.
But, yes. Yeah, just, I mean, a simple thing is just pit road. I had three speeding penalties to start the year, the duel, and the second and third race, I sped in all of them. So, yeah, it's something that I've talked with him about, and he's helped me through it.
Let's talk about Darlington this weekend. Obviously, big weekend, always a fun time for us going to Darlington. What's the fun level like for a driver going to a track as difficult as Darlington?
It's fun if you go fast. I've been fortunate to have speed there in a couple different teams and race cars and series, but she's sent me home with my tail between my legs every time so far. So, for me, it revolves around speed and if we make speed or not.
Coming up, we'll preview all the paint schemes you'll see on track during Throwback Weekend at Darlington.
Craftsman in your hand, not to stop me, yeah. Not a chair, quick to stand, only the engine repair. Craftsman in your hand, nothing you can't do. Make it long, make it John, or that kitchen hat on. Craftsman in your hand, not to stop me, yeah.
From outdoor care to home and auto repair, do it with Craftsman. Find the tools, equipment, and storage you need at your local Lowe's, Ace Hardware, or Craftsman.com.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. Throwback Weekend has become one of the most anticipated traditions each year on the NASCAR schedule. This year, the theme for Darlington is grassroots racing, as the drivers and teams pay homage to their roots, as well as numerous other short track icons across the country. Here's Kurt Becker.
Throwback Weekend is once again upon us as the NASCAR world heads to the PD region of South Carolina to Darlington Raceway. NASCAR fans have become accustomed to seeing the retroactive paint schemes each team uses annually at Darlington to pay tribute to NASCAR legends of the past. And each year it is our pleasure at Motor Racing Network to describe those historic patterns and designs for our listening audience. This year, as always, there will be the traditional throwback paint schemes honoring Cup Series drivers and sponsors of past eras. But to mix things up, several teams have placed their focus on celebrating the roots of the sport. One driver who is taking the lead in that regard is Josh Berry. The pilot of the number 4 Ford Mustang Dark Horse for Stewart Haas Racing, Berry will pay homage to his crew chief, Rodney Childers, as Berry's car will be a replica of Childers' gray, red, and black late model paint scheme from 1998. Berry explains how the team came up with the idea.
I definitely was not interested in throwing back to myself. I definitely wanted to do somebody else. And, you know, it just opened the opportunity with Rodney and Rodney's career racing late models, you know, before becoming a crew chief. And then everybody buying into that. Harrison's buying into that, helping making the car, the branding, you know, changing up their branding to adapt to that. You know, it just made it all make sense. And you know, it's a cool deal. So Rodney was really excited. We surprised him a couple weeks ago with the unveil of that. He was super excited for that. And it's just a cool thing, right? It just gives us an opportunity to give back just a little bit to a lot of the people that do a lot for us. And it's more than just throwing decals on a car to sell diecasts or something like that. You know, it's for us, it's this one really has a lot of meaning for especially for Rodney and him thinking back to his career and his growing up and learning racing. So it'll be fun. I know it'll be cool for him to have his family there, I'm sure, and watch the car go around the track.
Harrison Burton, driving the number 21 for Wood Brothers Racing, will dial the clock back 71 years as he will compete in a 1953 Leonard Wood Special throwback scheme. The car will be black with white lettering and trim. The Wood Brothers, being one of the oldest and most historic teams in the garage, have a long-standing tradition at Darlington, a tradition and legacy which are not lost on Burton's crew chief, Jeremy Bullens.
For me, it's just a huge honor to be, you know, part of the 21 and the history there, and, you know, was fortunate enough to get the 99th win with Blaney in 2017, and you know, hopefully we can get 100 here before it's all said and done, and maybe some more. But got a really cool throwback paint scheme to the Glenwood Special this week. It's it looks really cool, and there's no team in the sport with more history in NASCAR than the Wood Brothers, so it's really nice to be able to continue to pay tribute to that history.
Corey LaJoy and Ryan Preece will both showcase paint schemes honoring their early racing days at the grassroots level of NASCAR. LaJoy will be in a similar paint scheme to the one he raced to his first career NASCAR Regional Touring Series win. LaJoy won in 2012 at historic Bowman Gray Stadium in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, in what was then known as the K&N Pro Series East, in a predominantly white paint scheme, which this weekend will be enhanced with purple, red, and green accents. Preece, who built his reputation by racing modifieds, will honor his 2013 NASCAR Whelen Modified Championship and his time with Flamingo Motorsports with a red, gray, and blue arrangement slightly altered from the original orange, white, and blue scheme. And Chase Briscoe will honor his family's sprint car racing history in a circa 1976 dirt sprint car throwback scheme featuring red and white colors. But much like last weekend at Kansas, Kyle Larson may steal the show on Sunday as the number 5 Chevrolet will throw it back to Terry Labonte's 1996 NASCAR Cup Series championship season. Larson will be in the memorable red, yellow, and green livery that proudly displayed Kellogg's on the hood, making for a fitting tribute to Labonte, who scored the first and last victories of his Cup Series career at the track, too tough to tame.
The crowd in the backstretch grandstands waving their caps and waving their arms as Terry Labonte hurdles off the end of the back straightaway, not being challenged by anyone, not closing in on any lap traffic. Terry Labonte comes off turn four. Terry Labonte's going to win again at Darlington.
A winless streak dating back 156 races ends today as Terry Labonte wins at Darlington in the Mountain Dew Southern 500. He's had 51 starts at this racetrack, two wins. The first was his very first of his career in 1980, and today he does it again.
This weekend, NASCAR will pack 76 years of history into a full racing weekend at one of its most historic tracks, as Darlington Raceway will once again present one of the sport's most popular traditions.
Thank you, Kurt. It'll be a blast seeing all these paint schemes in action at Darlington this weekend.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Welcome back to NASCAR Live. One of the people being honored this weekend with a special paint scheme is Stuart Haas Racing crew chief Rodney Childers. That crew chief started his career as a driver navigating short tracks in the South, and SHR decided to honor Rodney's roots with a special scheme on the Ford Mustang Dark Horse of Josh Berry. Our Jason Toy sat down with the crew chief to discuss the season as a whole and his journey into and through NASCAR.
All right, Rodney, let's start talking things off here a little bit about the season so far. I know you were excited last year, obviously, after Kevin announced his retirement, and you guys did the big tour last year with that, but you were real excited to get Josh Berry in the seat of that number 4 Mustang Dark Horse. So assess where you guys are right now with the development. Really, I hate to say not really say it like this because he had a lot of starts in the Cup Series, but your Sunoco Rookie of the Year candidate out there.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, like you said, I had a ton of confidence in Josh going into the season and everything that he's done in his past and just watching him grow up of racing late models and doing different things. And, you know, honestly, he's done a really good job. I've told people every week that I don't think as the public out there really realizes how good a job he's done. You know, being a rookie in the Cup Series right now is so tough. I mean, it's crazy tough. And I honestly didn't know that until this year, you know, being with a veteran like Kevin for so long. But I've got to see all of that firsthand and, you know, what that entails and all those things. But he works his butt off every week. He studies. He shows up prepared. You can ask him about, you know, a certain car's throttle trace race from the year before or the race before, and he can tell you exactly what it looked like during the race and how different people were driving the cars. You know, all that's been really good. I think the biggest thing is just, you know, figuring out these cars, mainly on the intermediates. You know, we've been really fast at the short tracks at Bristol, at Richmond, Martinsville. You know, we were good. And then the speedways, we've honestly been good too. Atlanta, we had a really good car, but the Daytona, Talladega, we had good cars. You know, some of it is just, you know, everybody learning each other and those kinds of things. But the intermediates is where we've struggled the first stage. And that's the thing that we got to get better at. It doesn't seem like it really matters where we qualify at. We fall back at the beginning of the intermediate races and then we claw back the whole race. You know, this past week, we fell all the way to 31st, I think, in the first stage. And then, you know, coming with 10 to go, we were running 12th. So that's hard to do anymore. It's so hard to pass and that kind of thing. So, you know, we're figuring it out a little bit week by week. But overall, you know, he's doing a really good job for us.
You know, and the one thing with Josh coming in, you know, yeah, he's a rookie, but he has a ton of experience and talked about the short track racing and what he's done in the Xfinity Series and those limited starts that he had in the Cup Series, too. But a lot of times when you get a rookie, you got to mentally coach that rookie, too, to not rush the process. Take what you're getting and continue to learn more and more. You talk about Josh being a guy that studies everything. Do you have to control emotions on things to say, you know, he wants to be up there in that top spot every time, but it takes time to build up to that point?
Yeah, honestly, I've kind of went the other way. I let him figure it out on his own because I think that way it's going to, you know, it's all going to stick better, I think. And, you know, and he's the type of person that I don't need to tell him how to drive. I mean, there's certain things, whether he's, you know, maybe he's on the brake pedal too much or whatever, that might be a different case. But like in that first stage on Sunday, you know, we went backwards. And then by the end of the run, we were pulling away from the leader. We were worried about going a lap down at one point, and then next thing you know, we pulled the leader a straightaway in 10 laps, and I was like, crap. So, you know, it took that whole first run to kind of start figuring it out and all those things, but that's just part of it. You know, we kind of have to support him, and he has to support us and have each other's backs and all those things, and just, you know, keep moving through the motions every week of trying to get better, figure out how we can study more or how we can make better adjustments before the races, all those things. And you know, like I said, he's been super, super good with all of it. And you know, hopefully we can just keep getting a little bit better as the year goes.
Rodney Childers here with us. He is the crew chief for Josh Berry with Stuart Haas Racing, of course, the Mustang Dark Horse. But let's talk about you two and Josh and the aspect that obviously short tracks are a big part of y'all's lives and your past lives is too. And this weekend at Darlington, it's a throwback, but the special one for you because it's a throwback to you in your short track racing. How about that?
Yeah, Cheddar and I were just down there on the shop floor kind of laughing about it because, you know, last year I got to do the gentleman start your engines at Homestead. Now I have a throwback car for me. And he said, you know, what's next? It's got to be retirement, right? I mean, you're right there with Mike Helton at this point. So, you know, it's really cool. They surprised me. I don't know how they managed to hide all that from me. But, you know, going to the governor's mansion was really cool. And I kind of wondered what the car was under the cover. I assumed that it was when he won the national championship in the late model series. And when he started pulling the cover back, we only got it to about halfway up the hood and I realized what it was. And it was about all I could do not to cry. And then I had to, you know, stand up and talk in front of about 100 people. But, you know, seeing it in the lobby, the show car is still in the lobby. So seeing it every day and then finally seeing the true race car, the Dark Horse race car with the wrap on it has been really, really neat. So it'll be a special, you know, day for me personally and my family and everything that goes along with that. So, you know, hopefully we can go run well. We had a really good car there last fall and I think we qualified fastest in the first round of our group and was about to take the lead when all hell broke loose a little bit with the 45 spinning out and all. But that's going to be a difficult racetrack for a rookie to go there and be competitive, just the way that the tires wear and all, you know, the way the rubber gets laid down and the lanes get moved around. But hopefully we can give him a really good car and be competitive, and it'll be neat to see that thing on the racetrack.
Well, kind of give to do justice here for the folks that are listening here on the radio, silver with the red and the black across the bottom. But you're also we got Harrison's on there, and you talked about South Carolina. You guys went to the governor's mansion there and did the unveiling for it. Harrison's a South Carolina-based sponsor for you guys, too. But it's got some other short track names on there, too. Tell folks about how all that happened and how it evolved from you to this.
Yeah, and I didn't know anything about that when I was, you know, supposed to talk, and which it was all a secret to me. But it's really just, you know, talking about the people that were from South Carolina and that the Hall of Famers, and just paying tribute to all those people. And Harrison's has been great to us, you know, and has a lot of history with short track racing. And we got Greenville Pickens on the hood, and, you know, that place is always special to so many people in the short track industry of going down there and racing. I got to race there, you know, when I was younger, and means a lot to me. And you know, just, you know, a lot of different names on the hood of Hall of Famers and different things that mean a lot to our sport, and mean a lot to Harrison's and mean a lot to South Carolina.
Hey, Rodney, best of luck. Congratulations. I know it's a big honor for you to have this car this weekend at Darlington, and you're always great to us and great to work with. And we look forward to seeing when you guys get to stand in victory lane.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason. Coming up, in honor of Throwback Weekend, we'll throw back to some of the MRN broadcast team's first races with the network.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
Welcome to the broadcast for the very first time. Mike Bagley of Milford, Delaware, who'll be seeing the cars come straight at him from his position in turn one.
Thank you, Eli. Good afternoon, everyone. Turn one is a 90-degree right-hander. The banking, actually the racetrack, falls away from the race drivers as they enter the corner. Some drivers come through here too hard and run off into the grassy area. Sometimes they lock up the brakes, spin off here. It's a big mess as they come in turn number one. We'll keep our eyes open and call the action for you today from turn one in Watkins Glen International.
That's how it sounded June 27th, 1992, here on the Motor Racing Network, the Phase 150 at Watkins Glen International. Man, that was rough that day. That was my first broadcast with the network. They dropped me right along with Alan Bestwick, Eli Gold, Joe Moore, David Hyatt, Fred Armstrong, Jim Phillips, and Winston Kelly, and then me right in the middle of that for the first time. You talk about intimidating. My knees have never shaken so much. I almost couldn't stand. The nerves were flying. And General Manager John McMullen back then obviously heard something that he liked. And, well, here we are almost 32 years later. Alan and Eli, along with Barney, were some of my biggest mentors, along with Joe Moore, who I used to sit with in the turns as a production assistant that led to that moment right there at Watkins Glen. Wow, memories and a trip down memory lane. But what about the rest of the MRN crew? Here's Susie Armstrong.
A debut of any kind can be special and secure a spot in someone's memory forever. That is certainly the case for multiple members of the Motor Racing Network crew. For our announcers, the stories of their first broadcasts are a mix of achievement, nerves, and a few laughs. Dave Moody has been a staple of MRN for over 30 years. His first broadcast came at the World Center of Racing.
My first on-air outing with MRN was the 1989 Goodies 300 at Daytona. I'd auditioned for the network on Friday, and then I spotted for Dave Despain, later of Wind Tunnel fame, out in Turn 2. When it came time for Saturday's Busch race, Despain suggested that if I were to go out and call the turn instead of him, he could take a nice relaxing motorcycle ride up the coast. for some reason, management agreed and handed me the headset.
And up there in turns 3 and 4 from WDEV Radio and his home in Montpelier, Vermont, is Dave Moody.
Eli, I'm feeling right at home here today. We've got a rather stiff New England-style crosswind blowing here in turn 4. And as Tommy Ellis said just a moment ago, it adds just one more intangible to this already wide-open race. If today's Goody's 300 runs true to form, we'll be seeing packs of 10, 15, maybe even 20 cars drafting together. Under ideal circumstances, that makes for some of the best racing we'll see this week. But should something go amiss here on the 36-degree banking, it's going to be every man for himself. I'll cover the action here in 4.
Harry Gant ran really well for a lot of that day. He dropped out, though, before the finish with engine trouble, something that I was pretty proud to have predicted on air after noticing the oil accumulating on the back of his race car. The late Robbie Moroso led a ton of laps in the Swisher Sweets car that day, but the Cup Series veterans came to the front late, as they so often did back then. Darrell Waltrip passed Rusty Wallace on the final lap to win the race. So if you feel like you've been stuck with me for the last 35 years, bottom line, blame Dave Despain.
While Daytona in February is hard to beat in terms of your first broadcast, Kurt Becker came close when his debut happened at the same track where we will race this weekend, Darlington Raceway.
My first broadcast with Motor Racing Network actually came at Darlington. Labor Day weekend, 1994, Saturday race. The NASCAR Busch Series at the time, now the NASCAR Xfinity Series. Two things I remember about that day, a lot of rain and a lot of Mark Martin. It took a long time to finally get the race started. The rain just kept falling, and the longer it took to get the race underway, the more nervous I got, the more uptight I got, the more I paced back and forth on the infield. Finally, the call came to go out to the corners to our broadcast positions. I was in turns 3 and 4 at the end of the backstretch, and I just recalled that the race was actually already had started. This was a rare occasion where we missed the first, say, 20 laps maybe of the race that day, so we actually joined the race in progress. That kind of conveys what kind of a chaotic day it was, weather-wise and otherwise, but one thing about it, Mark Martin was so good in that era at Darlington. He just absolutely dominated. One thing I learned that day for sure, when you've got a dominant driver, you better find creative and different ways, lap after lap after lap, to say, hey, this driver's still leading the race. Never forget it. Mark Martin and the Winn-Dixie car at Darlington.
Larry Pearson will stay tucked down. Still cannot get by Dale Jarrett. Mark Martin continues to lead. Leader moves on down into turn 3. He is all alone now as Chad Little gets some mild pressure from Dale Jarrett.
Now let's move on to the current lead anchors for MRN. While Alex Hayden and Jeff Striegel are both now considered two of the best broadcasters in all of motorsports, Alex remembers being terrified before his first broadcast at Rockingham.
My very first on-air MRN broadcast, February 1997, the GM Goodrich 200, coming off of Daytona, where I just did some PA work, my first radio gig with MRN. I was terrified, and I had Barney Hall and Alan Bestwick in the booth, Joe Moore in turns 1 and 2. I was working the backstretch in turns 3 and 4. You had Jim Phillips, Winston Kelly, and I believe Marty Snyder were the three pit reporters for that race. We go through the morning. I learn the race cars the best I possibly could while shaking every second of the way through the garage area. We have our production meeting. I keep my mouth shut, speak only when spoken to, and then it's time to suit up. Put all the wireless gear on, walk out of our truck, go out to my billboard out in turn number 3, but I'll never forget, I took maybe 4 steps away from the MRN truck, shaking, and I hear this booming deep voice behind me. Hey! New guy, don't screw this up. Of course, that was our lead pit reporter, Jim Phillips, and he had a way with words, and he was far more colorful than the way I just said it. So if I wasn't scared enough, I had Jim Phillips telling me not to screw up the broadcast on my very first time.
After the field exits turn 2, they make a quick sprint down the back straightaway into the banking of turns 3 and 4. Covering things for Motor Racing Network today, Alex Hayden of Goldsboro, North Carolina.
Thanks, Alan. Good afternoon, everybody. As Joe mentioned, back pit entrance is on the exit of turn 2. Therefore, the pit exit of the backstretch is right at the entrance to turn number 3. They touched on it earlier about the trickiness of the entrance to turn 3. The preferred racing line right down on the white line at the bottom of this 25-degree banking here in 3 and 4. as the tires do go away. However, the line goes up. The racing line will go to the high side of the racetrack. Either way, the drivers need to get the momentum up off of turn four and back to the stripe. I'll cover all the action down here in turn three and four.
It was terrifying, and I wondered what in the world I'd gotten myself into, but I muddled through it. I haven't heard that broadcast in over 20 years. I don't know if I ever want to hear that broadcast again, because I'm sure it wasn't very good. It was a deal I got through, though, and it's a memory I'll never forget.
Jeff Striegel also remembers the nerves he felt and recalls the story of Mike Bagley picking him up from the airport ahead of his first MRN broadcast at Texas Motor Speedway.
Mike Bagley picked me up from the airport. He quickly reminded me that this was a privilege to be a part of the Motor Racing Network, and that was never lost on me. I knew what it meant to wear the blue shirt, and I was absolutely proud to do that. The thing that I remember before the race was how Mike Bagley spent all weekend coaching me, mentoring me, asking me what I needed, explained to me how the whole thing was going to work, and I just sat there like a sponge and absorbed everything he had to say. When we got to race time, I was positioned in turn four on top of the suites at Texas, which is a mile and a half above the racetrack, and I am afraid of heights. I finally sat down. I was already very, very nervous about the event that was about to take place. They were doing the national anthem. I was feeling so good and so proud to be there, but yet again nervous. Well, the flyover was a jet that came from behind me, so I never saw the jet coming. I never thought about the flyover. It ripped over my head. It felt like it was 20 feet above my head. It scared me so bad, I thought I jumped 20 feet and I was going right off the edge of the suites. I didn't, fortunately. I needed to collect myself, though, for a minute or two because I knew they were going to be coming to me shortly for the scene sets.
After flying down the backstretch, they'll pour into turns three and four into the view of our own Jeff Striegel from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
All right, thank you very much. Good evening, race fans. I, too, enjoy a spectacular view of this 1.5-mile Texas Motor Speedway. From my vantage point, I'll be watching from high above turn four. From here, I'll watch them as they work down that 1,330-foot backstretch before climbing the 24-degree bankings here in turns three and four.
The rest of the night went poorly. I called the trucks, cars throughout the night, and every time we went to break, Mike would come over and on the queue and say, "Jeff, those are trucks. We refer to those as truck links." Well, by the time he had done that 4, 5, 10 times, every time he queued the mic on the queue, and he would say, "Jeff," and I'd say, "Mike, I know what you're going to say. I'm going to work on it. I'm going to keep working on it." And I figured that was going to be my last broadcast with the Motor Racing Network. Fortunately, it was not. But it is indeed a night in Texas that I'll never forget.
This weekend, the MRN crew will suit up in their race day blues yet again at the Lady in Black in hopes of delivering yet another classic broadcast on Throwback Weekend.
What a trip down memory lane. That Throwback Spotlight brought to you by Whelan Engineering. Whelan Engineering is proud to be an official partner of NASCAR and serves as the official warning lights of NASCAR. Whelan Engineering, a global leader in the emergency warning industry, has been manufacturing in America for over 70 years. We never left, and we're here to stay. Coming up, we'll close the show out by flashing back to the 1991 Trans-South 500.
This is NASCAR Live. Now, back to Mike Bagley.
Checker flag is about to fly on this week's broadcasting extravaganza, but before we go, let's dial up the MRN time machine and set it to April 7th, 1991 for the Trans-South 500 at Darlington.
Just a little better than a straightaway lead over Davey Allison, the second place car. Michael Waltrip is third. He is also on the lead lap. Fourth place is a lap down. That will be Mark Martin. Kyle Petty is riding fifth. He's a pretty good ways right now behind Mark Martin as the laps do wind down here at Darlington in the Trans-South 500. Here's Ricky Rudd out of turn number two and up the long back straightaway. The only car inside as he approaches turn three will be Darrell Waltrip.
South Carolina afternoon sun glistening off the paint job of the Tide Chevrolet. Interesting note on Ricky's car. It's about the only one without any stripes or wrinkles on the fenders.
Here comes Ricky Rudd off turn number four back to the stripe. Awfully pleased with the start of this season. He gets the indication of two laps to go from Doyle Ford atop the flag stand as he's back in turn number one.
Rudd's riding all alone now, climbing the banking of turn number one, right up against the outside retaining wall, lined with all the stripes of all the cars that have collided here in turn two with this outside wall, and gently
Bagley makes his move off turn two and hits the backstretch.
Fans beginning to wave the hats and seat cushions in salute of Ricky Rudd in the back straightaway grandstand. He's already midway through turns three and four and on his way down to the stripe.
Just as smooth as he has been all day. If he looks down on pit road, he's going to see about 90% of his pit crew up on the wall. They'll be cheering him on this time as Ricky Rudd takes the white flag for one more lap around Darlington to win the Trans-South 500. He's in turn one.
Tide Chevrolet climbing the banking for the final time up in turn number one, right up to the outside wall, now gently dropping it down to the lower groove, making his way for the last time off turn two.
Ricky Rudd on the back straightaway again, being saluted by the fans at the entrance to turn number three, now half a mile from victory lane. Ricky Rudd and the Tide Chevrolet on the throttle off turn four.
And you can noticeably see, as we do here in the tower, that he is slowing down so very markedly in the turn, staying away from the wall. Checkered flag is out for the first ever career win at Darlington for Ricky Rudd.
You can listen to that race in its entirety by subscribing to MRN Classics wherever you listen to podcasts. I'd like to thank Ross Chastain and Rodney Childers for joining us on the show this week. I'm Mike Bagley. For the rest of the MRN crew, we thank you for checking us out as well. Don't forget another download of NASCAR Live Wide Open coming your way on Thursday, and a jam-packed weekend full of racing at Darlington this weekend. Until we speak again, friends, so long, everybody.
NASCAR Live is a production of the Motor Racing Network with studios in Concord, North Carolina, and was brought to you by Toyota. For the latest Toyota racing information, visit toyotaracing.com. Today's broadcast was produced by Trey Downey, Pat Jaggers, and Julian Council. The executive producer for MRN is Ryan Horn. Remember to visit MRN.com for all of the latest news and information. NASCAR Live is produced under an exclusive license with NASCAR. Any use of the accounts and descriptions contained in this broadcast must be with the express written permission of NASCAR and the Motor Racing Network.